is just going to give us So I have been feeling a bit flat recently, kind of stuck, and it probably doesn't help that I keep feeling sick at the moment. And that's kind of scary to say that as a leader of a church, particularly a church that says we want to be open to the Spirit of God, because if I was thinking, you know, the question I just asked Erica, like, where is the Spirit of God at work in your life? I'm not sure if I'd be able to answer that at the moment. So I decided to do researching, of course, that's my answer when I'm not sure the way forward. And I decided to research in particular Pentecostalism because this is a branch of the church that has been really focused on the Spirit of God, particularly in the last 100 years or so. And so I thought surely they might be able to help me. Now, even though they are like the fastest growing and most dominant expression of what it means to be a Christian today, I actually know very little about this branch, which I kind of feel bad about, so I was like, I'll research. Now, one of the interesting things about Pentecostalism is that it kind of began as this convergence of people who in a variety of ways were feeling stuck. Maybe they're feeling kind of stuck in their faith, like emotionally a little bit flat. Some people were feeling stuck because there was this pursuit of holiness, you know, wanting to live a good life, but feeling like I'm struggling to do that. And so particularly in the late 1800s, early 20th century, there was this like yearning for the Holy Spirit to come and gain and kind of enable people to live a holy life. And I kind of think there was also this yearning to see like what we read about in the book of Acts kind of happen again. So to experience Pentecost, to experience that excitement, to see healings, to see lots of people coming to Jesus, to see people speaking in tongues. Now, when Pentecostals talk about speaking in tongues, they mean it a little bit differently from the story in the book of Acts. So in the book of Acts, it's just people speaking in different languages. But there was this longing for people to be able to speak, not just in different languages, but almost they describe it as speaking like a language from outside of this world, the language of heaven. So one such man who was seeking this was this man named William Seymour. He was the son of a freed slave. He was born into poverty, so kind of stuck in poverty, stuck with illness. He battled with illness when he was a young person. In fact, he actually lost an eye due to illness. And so he's stuck and he's searching, and he comes into contact with a man named Charles Purnham, and together they start studying the Bible and preaching on the streets. And Purnham talks about the Spirit of God and says, you can be lifted up by the Spirit, you can speak in tongues, and Seymour kind of starts yearning for that. Now, they have a falling out, and so they kind of part ways. And Seymour starts his own little group with his friends, and they're studying particularly the book of Acts, and they're praying and fasting. And then on the 12th of April, 1906, Seymour experiences this lifting up of the Spirit. He starts speaking in tongues right there in this old building on Azusa Street. Now, Azusa Street becomes famous because more and more people start hearing what is happening and they start joining in and experiencing the Spirit in this way. So black and white people, women and men, and they gather in this like prayer gathering that does not end. It does not end for 3 years. So people come and go, but there's always somebody there praying and experiencing healing and speaking in tongues, and it's really exciting. And those who experience this then kind of take what they've experienced and they go out. And so like other little churches start springing up, kind of experiencing the Spirit of God in this way. Now, after 3 years at Azusa, this frenzy kind of fades, and Seymour is left leading like a small congregation kind of for the rest of his life. But Pentecostalism, as we know it, kind of takes off, and that's kind of the defining moment that kind of, then it just kind of explodes out into the world. When I think about the Pentecostal church, I think one of the things that it's brought kind of to the church as a whole is like a lot of excitement and kind of lifting people up. And a lot of good has come from this. But you know, with everything, there's always some not so good stuff, right? Like in every branch of Christianity, there's some not some good stuff that emerges. And one of the things, and this is not confined just to Pentecostal churches, this probably exists in every church, but particularly the Pentecostal church, one of the struggles right from the beginning has been around its leaders. Often Pentecostal leaders end up in scandals. And so there's this tension about what are our expectations on our leaders and what's causing these scandals to take place. As I said, it's not confined to Pentecostal churches because we see this even in Isaiah's day. There's these scandals happening with the leaders. And so we read this in Isaiah 28, verse 7. The priests and prophets stagger with alcohol and lose themselves in wine. They reel when they see visions and stagger as they render decisions. Their tables are covered with vomit. Filth is everywhere. There is this pressure in our lives, isn't there? Like whether we have leadership roles or whether we carry responsibility, which will be all of us to some degree, we have this pressure. And religious leaders are not immune to this. I guess religious leaders have this complicating factor because often religious leaders claim that they find their authority because the Spirit of God has come upon them. You know, they say the Spirit of God has kind of lifted me up into this role and you should follow me because I'm following the Spirit. And lots of people follow because they're like, oh, I want the Spirit of God too. I want to be lifted up. And so then different churches kind of have different structures about how much power, how much authority should one person, one leader have. The more power, the more authority that a leader has, the more pressure that that person feels. Now, I don't know what you do when you feel pressure. I think most of us try to hide it, try to hide our pressure or our stress, try to manage it. And we often manage it by turning to some not so helpful coping mechanisms. And I think alcohol is a prime example of something that people turn to, kind of to help relieve the pressure, but actually ends up being not so helpful. One of the things I noticed when I first came to the Northern Beaches was people love to drink here. I don't know if you realise this, but it's definitely different even from Hornsby. There's a huge drinking culture on the Northern Beaches. And I thought, wow, I wonder if like everybody's really stressed out and this is their way of like relaxing, or maybe they're just all, I don't know, wine connoisseurs and this is like their hobby. Yeah, it's hard to know. It's hard to discern because these things can be really hidden. And so I think alcohol actually does maybe resonate with our part of the world and that we can use it as a coping mechanism. Now, it's not the only thing. We could also talk about, I think I use books sometimes to cope with stuff. So you could use books or you could use being addicted to social media or gambling or pornography or pills or drugs or self-harm. Like there's a whole range of coping mechanisms that people turn to. And we turn to these things often because sometimes terrible things have happened to us and that's our way of trying to relieve the pressure. Sometimes we turn to these things because we're like, I just feel stuck. I just feel overwhelmed. I just need like a little boost. And sometimes we think that when you feel under pressure, the answer is just to escape. And so we're looking for some form of escape. The interesting thing is that sometimes religion promises this as well. Have you ever noticed this? That religion sometimes says, like forget about drinking yourself into oblivion. Come to religion. You can escape your problems that way. One of the early Pentecostal leaders who was also very influential is a woman named Amy Simple McPherson. She married a missionary in 1908. They had kind of experienced them being part of worship gatherings similar to Azusa Street, so this like experience of the Spirit in speaking in tongues. And so they wanted to like share what they had experienced and head to China. They don't get that far. They only get to Hong Kong and then her husband dies. And so then she returns home as a widow, but she decides to start preaching. Now, Amy is very charming. She's very confident and people are drawn to her. They feel like they can see the Spirit of God at work in her words. And so they're coming and they're experiencing healing and shaking and speaking in tongues. And there's this sense that you can just escape your problems, escape the world, just come and be part of this gathering. It's very uplifting. And Amy seems to be able to deliver. more and more people come, and so she kind of expands her influence. She's one of the first women, either the first or one of the first women ever to have a radio broadcast. She founds a church for a while, is the largest church in the world, able to seat up to 10,000 people. So on the surface, it looks like amazing and encouraging, but underneath, I don't think Amy is coping with all this pressure. She's incredibly anxious. She has OCD. She has a very fraught relationship with her mother, so often in conflict with her mother. She has a variety of affairs with different people. She's accused of fraud. And then curiously, she actually like disappears for a little while and then claims to have been kidnapped, and people aren't sure if that's true or not. Don't put all your faith in leaders. That pressure is not good. And the higher up we place someone, the bigger the fall will be. We see this time and time again. Scandals, not just of religious leaders, but we're focusing on religious leaders today. And I think sometimes it's partly the pressure and the expectations that we put on them. Elle Hardy, who's an Australian journalist who's written a lot about Pentecostalism, writes this about Amy. She says, with a seemingly endless ability to raise money and a flair for self-promotion, Amy Simple McPherson wrote the script for the public evangelicalism that can be seen in her many airs today. Add to this her ability to thrive in the face of scandal, and you have the quintessential modern Pentecostal preacher. Pretty bad reputation to have a reputation for being in scandal. Leaders are just like everybody else, and just like everybody else, sometimes we will turn to destructive coping mechanisms rather than God and then try to hide it. That's an awful pattern that needs somehow to be broken. And I think that's what God is trying to do in Isaiah. God publicly names the things that the priests and the prophets are turning to. You imagine this would be uncomfortable if you're a priest and prophet in this time and you're being accused of drinking to the point that you're drunk. There's something potentially shameful in that. Maybe you want to cover it up and hide. Sometimes we think God is just always going to say uplifting things to us. And if you think that, you might be disappointed, particularly if you've been with us in Isaiah. Isaiah isn't particularly an upbeat person. He keeps saying, listen, all these terrible things are going to happen. And nobody seems to want to hear that. Isaiah describes God as this wise teacher with such counsel to give, but nobody wants to hear because it's like they're stuck in these destructive coping mechanisms. And so God responds like this, Isaiah 29 verse 10. For Yahweh has poured out on you a spirit of deep sleep. He's closed the eyes of your prophets and visionaries. All the future events in this vision are like a sealed book to them. When you give it to those who can read, they will say, we can't read it because it is sealed. God's spirit puts the leaders into a sleep. A sleep so deep, you could almost describe it as a coma. That's not what we think when we think, I want to be open to the Spirit of God. I think we're expecting something exciting and uplifting, but here God's Spirit is doing the opposite. Here God's Spirit is sending people into a sleep so they can't see what God is doing, so they can't see the disaster that is about to come. You know, these prophets and leaders, as well as maybe overindulging in too much alcohol, I think also have forgotten their job. They've started to believe that their job is to entertain people, that their job is to amuse people, that their job is to like tell people what they want to hear and just give them nice, comforting things to say. And they've forgotten their actual call. In some ways, this is the appeal for us today too, isn't it? That if we're feeling stuck and if we're feeling stressed and under pressure, and we're thinking, do I want to come to church or not? Maybe we think, well, if I'm going to go to church, I want to be part of something that's going to make me feel good. Like I'm stretched as it is. I just want something that gives me a little bit of a boost, that entertains me, that encourages me in some way. I think this is one of the things that the Pentecostal church is really good at, is understanding the culture around them and what people are looking for. And, you know, the Pentecostal church kind of came at a time when lots of people were really bored with church and they're looking around and saying, I fall asleep when I'm in church. It's so boring. It's so irrelevant to my life. And the Pentecostal church has been really good at tapping into what people are actually searching for. Like, I don't know about you, but when I think about the Pentecostal church, I think of it being like a really vibrant place. And in some ways, it's doing what we're longing for. It's encouraging people. It's uplifting people. And one of the biggest contributions of the Pentecostal church is its music, right? Like, its music has kind of been picked up by every church because it's uplifting and encouraging. And millions of people are drawn to this and want to worship God in this way. But sometimes, don't you think our strengths can also be our weaknesses? That sometimes in this effort to encourage and amuse and entertain, we can lose our vocation as a church and as leaders. That yes, there's a role for entertainment and yes, there's a role for encouragement. But sometimes leaders also are here to challenge and to critique. And in fact, I think the church as a whole sometimes is called to challenge and critique the wider culture around us. And that's what a prophet is meant to do. A prophet is someone who like asks the question like, what is driving us towards entertainment? What are we trying to escape? What are we trying to avoid? That's what prophets are meant to do. And yet these prophets in Isaiah's day had kind of lost their way. They had forgotten this. There has been a string of documentaries recently around Hillsong. I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's a lot of articles around Hillsong and there's a lot of scandal around Hillsong. One documentary just came out this week was by a man named Mark Fennell, an Australian journalist on the SBS. And I had a watch. It's not very long. It's like just over an hour. And Mark Fennell is interesting because he's kind of asking the question, like, what's next for the church in Australia? And he's also interesting because he's kind of like an outsider insider. He grew up in Hillsong. He has a picture where his family is with Frank Houston, which is a little bit troubling now. And he speaks about like growing up in this church and feeling warmth, feeling love. But as a 15-year-old, he also walks away from the church. I don't think he believes in God. He doesn't feel connected to God. And he says for a long time, he didn't talk about growing up in Hillsong because outside, you know, in the rest of the world, people look at Hillsong and think, oh, that's a bit weird. So there's a stigma around it. So he said for a long time, I kind of didn't want to be associated with Hillsong. And in this documentary, he begins to open up and share about his experiences growing up and also share about his observations, kind of looking in as an outsider. And I think he has a prophetic role here and kind of looking and seeing stuff that maybe we don't always see. And he actually makes, I think, this profound observation. He says this, within the world of Christianity, I think there's a problem with toxic positivity, where anytime anybody tries to raise issues about money or exploitation or volunteerism, it gets framed as an attack by the enemy. Is there a danger, if we're always upbeat, that we become unwilling to accept criticism, that we become kind of scared or think, oh, you're just attacking us, this must be from the devil? This is what God is accusing the prophets and visionaries in Isaiah's day. He says, you are all going through the motions. You look like you're worshiping me, but your hearts are actually far from me. You're doing all the right things, following all the right rules, but you're actually escaping me. You say you follow the Spirit of God, but in actual fact, you're just following your own plans. These are pretty harsh indictments, but I think the harshest critique is that nobody's listening. In fact, people are saying to Isaiah, shut up, we don't want to hear this. You're attacking us, it's so negative. You're bringing us down, Isaiah. And so as Isaiah hears this from both the leaders and the people, he says this kind of on behalf of God, or I guess this is God speaking as well. Isaiah 30 verse 8. Now go and write down these words, write them in a book. They'll stand until the end of time as a witness that these people are stubborn rebels who refuse to pay attention to Yahweh's instructions. They tell the seers, stop seeing visions. They tell the prophets, don't tell us what is right. Tell us nice things. Tell us lies. Forget all this gloom. Get off your narrow path. Stop telling us about your Holy One of Israel. Just entertain us. Put on a show. Tell us nice things. But God cares. God cares so much that God is willing to speak the truth. And God speaks and says, you know those things you are doing to try and cope with this pressure you're feeling? It's actually not that helpful. Stop escaping. Stop using even me as an escape. God says these things that can be confronting because God cares. And don't we need people like that in our own lives? Hopefully we have people in our own lives who will say to us, I think you're relying on that a bit too much. I actually think that's leading to not so good things. Don't we need people in our lives to say, are you really okay? Like, really? The church should be a community where honesty is practiced, where we are able to admit that we're struggling or that we're able to admit that we feel under pressure or stressed. Because we worship a God who cares and cares about honesty. God goes on to say, if you continue this way, if you continue with lies, then lives will collapse. There'll be calamity. It's like a bulging wall that will burst forth. And even if that happens, even if the worst happens and there is calamity, it's okay because God is still with us. It's okay if we struggle with an addiction. It's okay if our lives kind of fall apart. Sometimes you think God is not there in that moment, but God is still there. In fact, maybe what God is trying to teach us is to be vulnerable. Maybe to be unstuck is to become vulnerable. Maybe to become unstuck is to go down instead of up. It doesn't really matter. Wherever we are, God is still there. And God goes on to say in Isaiah 30, that I'm here. I'm waiting for you to turn to me. I'm waiting to show you compassion and love. This is one of the beautiful truths that we hold on to as Christians, that we can come to God as we are. And God meets us there. God saves us. In Jesus Christ, we are saved. Now, that doesn't mean go up into heaven. Doesn't mean all our problems go away, that we can escape them. No, it means that God is with us in this life, empowering and helping us to work out how do we deal with our stress and pressure? How do we deal with addiction? How do we deal with whatever we're struggling with? God will walk with us. And actually, Jesus invites us to learn from him, to see Jesus as our teacher, as our leader, helping us to experience and receive grace. And part of what it means to be a church is to be a community that's learning to be vulnerable, a community that's learning to show grace to one another. I mean, that's the ideal. Often churches, I think, put a lot of pressure on people to look like we have it all together. But I don't know about you, but when I think about the moments when I have felt lowest, it's when someone has come along and sat with me in my lowest moment and just kind of just sat there and being present. And in that space of vulnerability, I've seen God's grace. And I think that's what it looks like, actually, to be open to the Spirit. It's not always the uplifting moment. It's at the bottom, finding someone just being there and walking with you. Isaiah ends with this kind of hopeful picture in Isaiah 32, verse 15. Until at last the Spirit is poured out on us from heaven, then the wilderness will become a fertile field, and that fertile field will yield bountiful crops. Justice will rule in the wilderness and righteousness in the fertile field. And this righteousness will bring peace. Yes, it will bring quietness and confidence forever. The Pentecostals, I think, are right to expect that the Spirit of God is at work in this world and in our lives, and that the Spirit of God can work in really surprising ways. But if we want to be a church that's open to the Spirit, I think we need to continue to press into what does it mean to be honest? What does it mean to be real? Because God says, come as you are, stop escaping, stop hiding, stop turning to these other things, come as you are, and say, I need help. Maybe I've been turning to things that I shouldn't have been turning to. I need help. I don't know how to get out of this. God says, come as you are, and then I'll pour my Spirit into you and breathe new life, breathe righteousness, breathe peace, breathe confidence. So I want to give us a space now to come as we are before God. in the quietness of our own minds, in our own hearts, I just want to give a space for you to pray. What's going on in your life? What do you need to bring to God this morning? And then I will lead us in prayer. Stuck? Who's feeling flat? Or maybe who's feeling overwhelmed or under pressure, God? But if there is anybody here like that, including myself, God, we come to you and say, this is where we're at, and this is who we are. Would you meet us here, God, in this space? May your Spirit pour out into us wherever we find ourselves, God. May we know your comfort. May we know your hope. May we know your healing. May we know your transformation. May you fill us afresh with your peace and your love. In Jesus' name, amen.